Job 38, 1 through 7. We've got ushers coming down the aisles with Bibles. If you need one, slip a hand up. For 37 chapters, Job has suffered, not quietly, not superficially, but relentlessly. This is not some momentary setback. This is this prolonged pain, this prolonged suffering. He has lost his children, 10 funerals, 10 empty seats at the table, 10 graves that changed everything. Everyone is gone, lost his wealth, everything that he had worked so hard for, everything that provided security, gone in an instant. He lost his health. You remember the sores that from the bottom of his feet to the top of his head, and he was scraping it with pottery in constant agony. Excuse me. Sleepless nights. He lost his reputation, once respected. He was now whispered about, judged, misunderstood. He's grieving on every level. And with each loss, the questions gained steam and got louder and louder. He's emotionally broken. He's physically exhausted, spiritually depleted, and he's searching. And in the middle of it all, he has questioned God, wondering just how a just God could allow such pain. He's cried out a lament. He's refusing to pretend the hurt wasn't real. He's poured out his confusion, demanded answers, longing not for comfort alone, but for clarity. Chapter after chapter is filled with the same question, why, God? Yet heaven is silent, and the weight of unanswered questions and suffering gets heavier and heavier. Job is not pretending. He's not hiding his pain. He wants answers. He wants justice. He wants God to have to explain himself. And for 37 chapters, God is silent. And eventually, Job and his friends have nothing to say to each other anymore. And Job, beginning in chapter 29, takes up this final position before God. And he laments the days of the past when his body was healthy and his life was filled with family and friends, and he acknowledges his present suffering is no longer endurable, and he demands that God provide an explanation. Finally, after what must have felt like eternity, God speaks, but not the way that Job expects. Because sometimes God doesn't come to explain himself. He comes to reveal himself. Last week, I reminded us that faith is not the absence of questions, but the refusal to abandon God when answers are missing. Now Job will get an answer. It's just not to his question. If you're following along on the outline, verse 1 as we begin, look for God in the storm. It begins like this. Then the Lord spoke to Job out of the storm. We're just going to talk about verse 1 here real quick. This is a turning point in the book of Job known as a theophany, or better understood as the appearance of God. A theophany is this manifestation of God. We see examples of this all throughout the Old Testament. In Exodus 33, we learn that no one can look upon God's glory and live, but a theophany is God revealing himself in a way that people can handle it, so to speak. Not the full glory of God. A God encounter of sort, and people can live. Also, there are appearances of what is called Christophany, which means the pre-incarnate appearance of Christ, and a third called angelophany, which is the appearance of angels. Whether the appearance of God is a theophany or a Christophany, both foreshadow the incarnation when God took on the form of man and lived among us. They both are pointing towards that. We read in Scripture how the Lord appeared to Abraham. Jacob wrestled with what appeared to be a man, but was actually God. God appeared to Moses in the burning bush. He appeared to Moses and Joshua and to Moses and Aaron. Frequently, the term glory of the Lord reflects a theophany, and the pillar of cloud has a similar function. So finally, God answered the door that Job had been knocking on for some time now. Since chapter 2, God has been absent. No signs of comforting or speaking. This entire time, Job ached to hear a word from God, but nothing except silence until now. The storm implies this violent wind, like the mighty wind that killed his 10 sons and daughters. What happened next was not at all what Job longed for or that he even expected. Job really wanted what we might think of as this a legal hearing, proving God to be guilty of the onslaughts toward him. But God, instead of answering Job's cry for injustice, answered Job's questions instead. Instead of God answering Job's subpoena, he flipped it and issued a subpoena to Job. What Job wanted was an explanation of evil and the role of suffering. But what he got instead was what felt like God's rebuke for challenging his ways. This morning, we'll ponder just a few of the questions that God asked Job in these first seven verses, when actually there were 70 of them. So God would use nature to interrogate Job. God handed out this pop quiz, so to speak, and that he had not studied for. But instead of him being able to answer the questions that God asked, he got to meet God face to face, which reassured him. God had not abandoned him. That is a key piece. Job had no answers for God's questions. So how then did he ever think he could debate with God? Our worship of God does not come from a place of comprehension of God and all of his ways, but rather from a place of awe and the appreciation of who God is. And though we are certainly puzzled at times with life, our praise for who God is never ceases. So God offers to Job no theological explanation of the mystery of his suffering. Job was never told and never been told. The book of Job would have immediately lost the message to all sufferers had Job gotten what he wanted. So the book of Job is teaching us through the divine theophany that there is something more fundamental than an intellectual solution to the mystery of innocent suffering. In other words, suffering in general, and especially innocent suffering, is far greater and more comprehensive than our intellect can even comprehend. The message for Job was really for his spirit, not for his intellectual reasoning or his intellectual understanding. Job's greatest anguish was over the thought that he had been separated from God. Thought of this morning. Have you ever pondered the thought that the greatest pain of hell is not the fire, but eternal separation from God? Job learned that God had not abandoned him. And it gradually dawned on Job that without knowing why he was suffering, he could face it as long as he knew and was reassured that God had not abandoned him. After looking, or shall we say demanding answers, God of all places meets Job in the storm, it says, not after it. He didn't sneak in the back door. He didn't whisper across the room to Job. He shows up in absolute chaos. Not when things calmed down or when the pressure wasn't so intense, but right smack in the middle of the pain. And this is a great reminder and truth for us to cling to. God is not absent in suffering. He is in it with us. When you are in a trial or experiencing pain or you feel all alone, remember that he is right there. He is in it with you. Job wanted explanations. He wanted reasons. He wanted a courtroom. God gives him presence, power, and perspective. The truth is, there are times when God chooses to not quiet the storm, but instead speak from it. Here we go, verse 2. Check your perspective. Verse 2, he said, "Who is it that obscures my plans with words without knowledge?" In a sense, God begins by rebuking Job, accusing him through a question of darkening counsel and clouding God's design of the universe. God didn't humiliate him with a list of, "Oh, Job, here's all of your imperfections and here's all the sins that you have committed. Who are you?" Which, according to his friends, was the very reason that he was being punished. was because of his sin. There has to be something wrong in your life, Job. Because of God's approach, Job's innocence was established, putting to rest once and for all his friend's foolish words and counsel. Who is it that obscures my plans with words without knowledge? He is saying to Job, you don't see the whole picture. You don't know everything. You're interpreting pain with only a partial vision of life. It would be like us saying or thinking, God must not care. This makes no sense. This isn't fair. Whether we're talking about God or whether we're talking about everyday life, limited knowledge makes dangerous conclusions. Limited knowledge makes dangerous conclusions. Just because you don't understand God's ways doesn't mean that God has lost his way. I think some good questions that we can ask ourselves is, what assumptions am I making about God right now? Am I allowing pain or suffering or trials or challenges to shape my theology of who God is? Have I accused God in my heart? Thirdly, examine your posture, verse 3. He says, brace yourself like a man. I will question you, and you shall answer me. Brace yourself like a man literally means to gird up your loins, tuck in the outer robe into your belt as a man would before he would go running or before he would go into battle. Be alert, be strong, and be ready. God is telling Job to stand firm, pay attention, because he, God, is about to speak. And God wasn't trying to intimidate him. It was an invitation, get this, for humility. You wanted answers? Now listen. Before God answers Job, he repositions Job. Because posture matters before perspective. This is kind of a moment that we might call an about face, a complete reversal. Earlier, Job had said, let the Almighty answer me. And Job stood as the plaintiff, demanding a response. Now God steps in and says, in effect, you wanted answers? Now listen. God's response to Job in chapter 38 is a message of who he is, the great I am, the self-sufficient one. For Job to learn this truth, God had to squash his ignorant thinking and address his words and questions without having any knowledge. I wonder, like a child who longs for his father, who's been gone for a time, might have this smile upon his face when his father returns, even while being corrected at some time later, the child smiles because the father is here again. We might imagine a small smile, maybe even on the face of Job throughout all of this questioning, now knowing that God hadn't left him. And as hard as the pending questions might be, he now knew God cared about him. How do I approach God? Is it with humility? Is it with entitlement? Do I want answers more than I want God? Am I listening or just talking? Fourth, remember who God is, verses 4-6. Where were you when I laid the earth's foundation? Tell me if you understand. Who marked off its dimensions? Surely you know. Who stretched out a measuring line across it? On what were its footings set? Or who laid its cornerstone? So God would now ask a series of questions on cosmology, oceanography, meteorology, and astronomy. But Job, I thought about this, Job wasn't a contestant on Jeopardy, therefore he couldn't say to God, I'll take oceanology for 500, right? Which, by the way, speaking of Jeopardy, Alex Trebek's famous line fits well in this account. Came across this. Listen, his famous line is this: don't tell me what you believe in. I'll observe how you behave, and I'll make my own determination. It's a great reminder that we can tell people all day long what we believe in, but it truly is the observation of our behavior that people use in determining what we really believe and what we believe to be true about God. And one of the most powerful ways of this belief is how we endure suffering and hardships and pain and trials. The questions that God asked Job were not trivia. They were all about perspective. God's confronting Job's limited human perspective. Job had been asking questions of why, wanting this courtroom explanation, and the idea of don't answer a question with a question, you've heard that, right? Clearly doesn't apply to God. He begins with his own questions that all seem to center around, are you really able to evaluate my governance of the world, Job? There's a huge gap between what Job can see and what God can see, what you can see and what God can see. Job could see pain, loss, and confusion, and God can see the total and complete design of the entire creation. Laid the foundation is like a master builder starting a building. Measuring line is like an architect planning with precision. Footings like stability, structure, and alignment. God uses this example of stability, precision, and alignment as an answer to point to intentional, measured, and designed, knowing that all of this matters to a person whose life has become chaos. God's intention is never to point out our stupidity. It's always to remind us of our finite selves, pointing to our desperate need for God. The intention of this first question is obvious. Job was nowhere to be found when God laid the foundations of the earth. God uses this irony to reveal Job's ignorance. Verse 4, where were you when I laid the earth's foundation? Tell me if you understand. So the first questions point to our insignificance before God. So God questions Job, pointed to his omnipotence and omniscience. And the point seems to be this. Job claimed that God has fallen asleep, so to speak, at the wheel of running the universe. And because of this divine neglect, he's had to endure unjust suffering. Verse 5, surely you know. Come on, Job, surely you know the answer. God is not using, this isn't a mockery for humiliation. It's what some call ironic truth-telling. It's designed to bring Job to the point of humility, of understanding just who he is before God. Kind of like saying, you don't know, so stop speaking as though you do. Humility is the doorway to peace in suffering because it stops the demand that God must fit inside our need for explanations. Humility is the doorway to peace in suffering because it stops this demand that God must fit inside our need for explanations. Where were you when I laid the foundation of the earth? If I can manage all of my creation, guess what? I can manage a crisis. Ask yourself, have I forgotten how powerful God is? Am I carrying something God never asked me to carry? Am I magnifying my problem more than God? Verse 7, see the bigger story. It says, while the morning stars sang together and all the angels shouted for joy. God's creation of the world took place to the accompaniment of the heavenly choir of angels, the morning stars. If you remember last week, on two different occasions, the angels came to present themselves before the Lord, and it says that Satan also came with them. while the morning stars sang together and all the angels shouted for joy, Job learns his story is a part of a much bigger story. His suffering fits into the Creator's narrative. God's purposes extend beyond human understanding. Your pain is real, but it's not the whole story. Let me ask you a few questions. What is troubling you and distracting you? What is weighing heavy on you? What captures your mind in quiet moments? What has you confused? What is affecting your ability to have joy? The one thing says this: the why of the storm is always less important than the what from the storm. James 1, 2 through 4 reminds us, consider it pure joy, my brothers and sisters, whenever you face trials of many kinds, because you know that the testing of your faith produces perseverance. Let perseverance finish its work so that you may be mature and complete, not lacking anything.